You should leave that in.
I'm leaving it. Chariot Solutions Developer Knows, episode 18. I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And we're here to talk about tech stuff that we think is interesting for developers. Eric, we got a whole bunch of stuff again today, about 12 links. You can go on delicious.com/developernews/18 to follow along, or hopefully if I get around to it, I'll actually put those in the show notes at techcast.chariotsolutions.com too. Let's see. What do we want to start out with? Let's start out with, I want to do this one, 11 creative ways to avoid becoming a workaholic. So I just recently took on working on a book for Manning called Spring Ruin Action. And it's kind of going to go through a meet pretty soon. And so I'm all about suddenly having basically two jobs.
Sure,
and certainly I'm glad. Thank you, Manning, for giving me the opportunity. And, you know, we're enjoying writing the book. But in looking at that and realizing how much sleep I'm losing, I'm looking into what I can pare down in my personal life to try to make things easier. So there's a nice little thing on zenhabits.net/workaholic. Tammy Strobel of Rowdy Kittens is the guest writer, I guess, for this thing. So one of them is my favorite, is get enough sleep. I tend to be an insomniac, and I guess it's because I have little kids, and I know you do too, Eric.
Yeah.
They just make you an insomniac by default.
No, not me.
No, you can fall asleep.
Sure.
You're my hero. So I think it's the quote that they had in there is, if you encounter someone who's acting like a fool, there's a good chance that the person is suffering from sleep deprivation. That's from Jason Fried and David Heinemeier of Hansen in Rework, the Rails guy, right? So basically, if you don't get enough sleep at night, it's basically like being drunk. From what I've read everywhere, it's about the same amount of ability to focus as being lit. So that's one. Spend time in nature. That's a good thing I like to do. You know, so there's basically 11 of these. Eat real food. God, I could do that more. Find a hobby. And of course, if you're spending all this time working, do you really have time for a hobby? But maybe you should be replacing some of that with a hobby.
So I do.
My new hobby is writing a book, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Which is okay by me. Anyway, zenhabits.net/workaholic is that one. But anyway, we're not here to talk about workaholic habits. We're here to talk about things like Python. So what do you got today? What kind of cool stuff?
What do I got today?
Yeah, pick something.
Pick something. Okay.
Pick something techie.
All right. Well, let's see. We have a link here on from a Google I/O 2010 presentation on BigQuery and prediction APIs. So these are new APIs that I believe they're both brand new. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are. That Google's added to the cloud. So so they're really two separate things. They kind of munched into one presentation. BigQuery, I'll describe it. It's not exactly groundbreaking, but it could end up being very useful. Basically, it's a set of RESTful APIs or a RESTful API, depending on how you look at it, that allows you to upload just tons of data and query it using SQL. I mean, it's pretty simple, but it's nice to be able to do something like that in the cloud. I know many people out there saying you couldn't do this before. Well,
Big table.
Well, it's all
different.
The back end to this is all the same Google architecture, the App Engine architecture, basically. So it's all still big table on the back end.
But you can query now with kind of a SQL term. Right?
Yeah, and you can
do that before with big table, kind of ish.
Yeah, the App Engine API is SQL-ish.
But there was stuff around like the number of rows you fetched and things like that, correct?
Actually, you know what? Before somebody from Google calls, I just made the assumption that it's all big table because everything in Google seems to be, right?
I wish I had a phone noise.
Yeah, right.
Hello, this is Google.
Yeah. So, yeah, no. I mean,
it would surprise me if it wasn't big table.
We don't really know for sure, but anyway, this gives you the ability to like load large data sets and query them. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, they're saying scalable to billions of rows, response time in seconds, simple queries in SQL, RESTful services, JSON, Google Apps scripts. So, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. So
that's seeing SQL in a web page. Yeah. I like it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they have examples, some really cool things like about embedding BigQuery in a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine
cool.
That's
That's
kind of cool. So nice. I have your charts driven by BigQuery, that kind of stuff.
So data analysis through the web using SQL directly from a charting on Google, a Google Doc chart. You could do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's very cool. Okay, so that's a nice way of getting stuff published out there to look at. Okay.
Yeah. So the more interesting thing, I think, is the prediction API. So, mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of apps out there that need to do things around prediction. So they give an example of analysis of the language of just data, but it could be any document. So they have an example of documents that are English and Spanish. So basically you have an API that you can upload, a model and data for training the model, really. And then so that, you know, there's, they go through all the different steps, but, and then, you know, the last step would be to actually make new predictions. So you provide, you know, a prediction request through a post, standard RESTful request. Uh-huh. And in the example here, you know, it'll tell you, okay, well, this is probably Spanish based on the data that you've given us, that you've trained us. Now, I saw one cross link to this describe it as supervised categorization, because I guess there's different categories of prediction engines. So basically, it's a categorization engine that you can train. So it's a little bit of AI in the cloud there.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it is very cool.
I like it. I like it. All right, let's see. Next story. I will do a Spring story, actually. If you're a Spring developer, Chariot, just so you know, is a Spring Source partner. So just to get that disclosure out of the way. There is a security exploit that was just announced on June 17th, 2010. If you're running on Spring 3.0.0 and higher, or Spring 2.5.0 to 2.5.6 Security 01 for community release, or 2.5.0 to 2.5.7 subscription customers, there happens to be an exploit that you can, if you can get a jar that could attack something out on the web, and you post a particular URL request to a server, and basically pass what looks like a property setting into it, such as, well, let's say class.classloader.urls.
Mm-hmm.
You can even say the first URL is, you know, some attack jar. Mm-hmm. So actually what you can do is you can point to a jar on the net, and because there's a web class loader as part of Spring, it can actually go ahead and run that code. So this is they're getting this out here. It's basically a zero-day security vulnerability out there. So if you're a Spring developer, you should be looking at and patching this by upgrading to a new version of Spring. They are going to do a fix for version 3.0.3 of the Spring framework. And there is a 2.5.6 Security 02 release for community. And for subscription, there's a 2.5.6 Security 02, and as well as 2.5.7 Service Release 01. So, you know, they found it right away when they found it. They put the patch in. They announced it. So hopefully this is a blip, but it's something you should definitely take a look at.
Right. And if for whatever reason you can't upgrade your Spring jars right away, I guess you could always, you know, put in a filter, servlet filter or something like that.
Right, right.
To block this. But it's, yeah.
Something to look at. And yeah. And again, that's at springsource.com. We'll have a link to it in the show notes, but just in case, I'll read the URL out. springsource.com/security/CVE-2010-1622.
Right.
All right. So just want to get that out there. Take a look at it if you're a Spring developer. Okay. But we weren't here just to talk about security exploits. Let's talk a little bit about cloud computing performance.
Sure. I stumbled across an article on bitcurrent.com on a report on cloud performance. So these guys worked with Webmetrics to do some research on different cloud platforms. So some of them – so before we get into it, it's not exactly apples to apples here. So they're kind of comparing platform as a service providers like Google,
right,
and EC2. Well, no, that's not.
No, I hear you. So Salesforce,
like Salesforce, right?
The Force,
and infrastructure as a service like Amazon,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, and they did tests that they could make as similar as possible against each one.
Mm-hmm.
So in each case, they did things like they took they read and wrote small objects and large objects, and they did some specific. You know, CPU intensive tasks and IO intensive tasks, and did some real world application type things. And you know, they have nice some really pretty charts. You know, comparing all of them. You know, I can't go through all the results, but basically, you know, it tells you that they all did fairly well. All these the different cloud platforms. I think Google did well in cases in where you can parallelize tasks and things like that. So if you take a look at this link, you know, you get the PDF, you can kind of match the profile of whatever you're trying to do, your solution, against the performance of each one of these.
Right. And I see that for pages, whatever, 7 on down or 8 on down, they actually show the test profile for each given platform.
For each platform, yeah. Right, exactly.
Right, and you can see things like, you know, how long did it take to load the page, you know, and for based on, I guess, different types of operations and such. That looks pretty intense.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, cool. All right, let's go to another story here. Screen. So what happens when you do it in an iPad and it locks on you. Okay, so let's look at Groovy++ in action, DSL for embedding HTTP server. Now, so this one's pretty cool. On DZone, groovy.dzone.com, which is a nice little brackish water of the DZone site that deals with us groovy people. Did you know that in Java 6, it was pretty easy to kick off an HTTP server? I did not. Apparently, that's something that's been shipped with Java 6, is the ability to run servers pretty straightforward and pretty easily. But anyway, so if you look at particular article by Alex Chackman, he goes through and he sets up a simple HTTP server using a closure where he basically says, you know, HTTP server gives it a port and then puts braces out there, and now you're running an HTTP server. Kind of cool. So, and you can say, you know, whenever I get a particular call, you know, go ahead and send out the response headers, do the body, whatever. So in like 5 or 6 lines of code, you could have a complete web server embedded in your application, even if it's not a web-based application. Pretty cool little thing there. He has some pretty extensive code. You know, he goes into a full server definition, sets up filters, all sorts of stuff. So it's a little geeky, but maybe useful to you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Why don't you take a story?
Sure, sure. Okay, so let's take a look at Pyro.
Pyro,
of course, P-Y-R-O.
Of course.
Yes, everything is P-Y something. So Pyro 4.0 was just announced, and Pyro stands for Python Remote Objects. And if you take a guess as to what that might be, it's probably exactly what you're thinking.
Would it be remote objects in Python?
Yes. Very good.
So, you coached me in this one.
No. So you know, it's kind of like RMI, but easy.
Okay.
You know? So, you know, and it uses standard Python serialization, also known as pickling, which I love that term.
Pickling.
Yes. And, you know, it has a name server and discovery and all the usual standard fun remote object, you know, fun.
So it's nice and small, very quick to get things up and running, remoting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Adding feeds with Grails plugins. I think we might have mentioned something about RSS in the past, or at least I've been dealing with it now here and there, for Groovy and Grails. So this is an article at changeent.com. This is someone that had to go through dealing with RSS feeds, and he found, for example, using the feeds plugin from Grails, he shows you how to set it up. He then shows you how to create a service to deal with feeds. Shows you even the SQL statement if you want to store things or query things. Oh, I see what he's doing. He's actually returning back a feed in this case, and how to create the controller to emit the feed and so on and so forth. So it's a nice kind of if you have to deal with RSS and you actually have to, I guess, emit RSS. He even gets into metadata and things like that you need for the feed. So anyway, I'm rambling here, but the bottom line is it's a nice little example of using Grails to emit RSS feeds. Another one I wanted to talk about briefly is the Google command line tricks. Now, this is cool. So, hey, you command line hackers out there, hands up, anyone who likes using the command line over GUI. Eric and I both raised our hands because why in the heck do I have to pick up my hand and move it to a mouse, right?
Right.
So, and how many times have you been working on your code and someone says, hey, at 4 o'clock tomorrow, there's a stand-up meeting. And you go, okay, I'll have to go get out of my workflow and go click on my stupid little web app and log into Google Calendar and click the event and create whatever.
Yep.
Pain in the rear end. So this will only work, by the way, for the moment with regular Google Mail accounts, not with Google Apps for Domains. And we're Google Apps for Domains. But I think that's coming right along because there's an issue against that. But anyway, there's a Google command line tool, and it's written in
– Well, what do you think?
Python.
Of course.
Of course, they love Python. And it's very cool. You do need to install a library first.
What, like Python?
GData Python client. Yes, Python. Python 2.4, 2.5, actually 2.5 or higher. And then you get a command line. You can literally say Google Calendar add schedule or something like that. It works with Google Docs. It works with Google Calendar. I think a number of the other services, Picasa and a few others. That's kind of cool. But the one that really got me was this. I'm just going to read the command line to you. You can think and just start getting excited, especially you Linux people. Google Docs edit --- title. Something in quotes, --- editor vim. So let's say you're a VI geek.
I am.
All right. Yank put perhaps. Mm-hmm. And you want to actually quickly put together a document and dump it into Google Docs. You can use VI to do that.
That is so amazingly cool.
I am totally a fan of this, and I would do that just on the fly as you're doing like agile programming or something. Oh, I want to make a list out. Work tasks. We're in the code. We're in the editor. Okay, I don't want to go and break my workflow. Open a little command line, pop that out, get it done.
Well, one thing that I really like about this, besides the whole command line aspect of it, is that it sort of reminds you that that Python module's out there. And since it's just Python, you can obviously open it up, look at it, incorporate it. You know, and I'm guessing it probably uses protocol buffers or, you know.
I'm guessing. I don't really honestly know. But
I don't know, but now you can look at it.
You can. And in fact, all the source code comes down with it, so you could certainly take a look at it, I suppose. Yeah. So that, I thought, was worth mentioning in a developer news podcast.
Absolutely.
That's news you can use, folks.
That's going to affect my life daily.
Yeah. Well, it will once we get Google Apps for Domains. But I mean, even for personal reasons, it's useful, right? All right. You've got another one?
Yeah.
You has another one?
Well, I know we keep harping on HTML5, but I feel like I can't talk about it enough, right?
Keep talking about it.
So I came across this site, HTML5rocks.com, and it has this just absolutely phenomenal online slideshow, which is also live, so it gives live examples of every single HTML5 change And if you hit it with a browser that's fully HTML5 compatible, you'll see this all.
Which I'm in Chrome right now, so let's see it happen.
Yeah. So it starts off with all the JS APIs, so all the new ones, right? So they're all very cool, including web local storage, web SQL, application cache API. I didn't even know this one was
there. Oh my God.
So that's so very cool.
If you don't look at this and you don't know anything about HTML5, you are really missing out.
Absolutely. Web sockets. JS notifications, drag and drop, geolocation. I mean, it's got complete code examples everywhere. And that's just the JavaScript side stuff.
What we do for you people? Do you see what we bring you people
I'm so excited that I can't slow down when I speak now.
This thing is so cool. Yeah, you have to look at this. HTML5rocks.com. And so the trick is, if you go to that, there's a presentation link at the very top. And boy, is that a cool presentation. It's making me rethink. For my own, training work, I want to see how that's done, because my God, this is the most beautiful little presentation tool just built in HTML5. But if you go to HTML5rocks.com and click presentation at the top, it literally shows up and it says, it looks like it has a little slide and a bunch of ones to the right. It says, this presentation is an HTML5 website. Press right key to advance. And they're zooming in and out, and you just move your way through it. It's really a cool way of kind of navigating a presentation using HTML5. So I'm going to dig into that code too.
Yep.
But boy, is it nice. I mean,
Has all of the CSS examples for all the new stuff in CSS.
Now let's get on a tear, because we haven't gotten any lately. So HTML5, when and what? So right now I know if you've got an iPhone, if you've got an Android phone, you generally have an HTML5.
Yeah, well,
browser.
The what is mobile, right? Unless you're, BlackBerry, and that's coming.
Right, that's coming. Right? But now on the desktop. But anyway, I know that Chrome is HTML5. I know Safari is partially. There's HTML5.
Different levels of compliance at this point.
Right, right.
So
anyway, the interesting thing is, and this is my tear, is it takes a long time for this technology to make it so that it's completely usable by everybody. So if you have an app that you want to write HTML5 against and you're in the public space and you can't tell people you must be on an HTML5 browser, you can't do this. But if you're a mobile developer, you can right away start looking at, especially if you're going to do iPhone and or Android, you can start taking advantage of this stuff right away.
Right.
So that's just something to keep in mind. In fact, it may make your life easier writing websites against mobile development. Because what are some of the cool stuff? Some really neat features of location awareness, right?
Yeah.
So you
there's so much cool stuff. I can't even.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that in and of itself is pretty cool. Like, tell me where you are. In fact, I've gotten that message on, just the iPad or on the iPhone saying, can we find out where you are? Twitter does this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I did a tweet from a web application, just a regular web login, and it said, oh, where are you? And it had a little drop down of all my last locations that I must know from the last time I tweeted from a location. And that was just using HTML5.
Right.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Okay. But anyway, really neat site, HTML number five rocks, HTML5rocks.com.
Okay.
So in wrapping it up, Eric, a while back, last week or so, or 2 weeks ago, you had bookmarked the Git reference. And we've been all busy, so we haven't had a dev news show. But we were on a tear about Git for a while. So the Git reference, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Git reference is a Git reference.
Hence.
It's just a nice, compact, mostly used features.
Right.
Type reference for Git. So I'll give one of the section titles is How to Think Like Git. So
right.
That gives you an idea what kind of a document it is. So the things that you do most often you know, it really has a nice overview of. So basically, you know, branching, checking out, merging, using the log, pushing, pulling, all that kinds of stuff. So
right, right. Just
it's just a very concise, basic.
That's great.
You know, look quick lookup.
Yeah, actually, they say in here the Git reference was put together by the GitHub team. So there we go. So good.
Okay.
And it's gitref.org. So there you go. So if you're a brand newbie on a Git project, you could certainly look at the one we mentioned a couple weeks back, which was the Yehuda Katz article, which was interesting and a nice kind of walkthrough of how he converted to Git and thinking like a Git developer. And then to get the good reference, it's gitref.org. All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Wait, you got one.
I have to.
You have to. Then you should.
Okay. So we'll put this up in Delicious, or I will in a minute.
Okay.
I'm back on HTML5.
Keep going, man.
So we really weren't sure. We wanted to know a good reference for finding out which CSS3 and HTML5 features were included in what
browser. In which browser, right.
So I found this really pretty looking chart of you'll have to go to the link because it's
a long one, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a long one, but it's just really good chart and includes Chrome, Firefox, Opera, Safari, IE, and their percent level of compatibility, and you know, broken down by things like for CSS, like animations, columns, gradients, reflections, transforms, selectors.
Wow, it's pretty extensive.
Yeah, embedded content, the audio codecs, the video codecs, the form stuff.
What's the website name?
Well, it's Find Me by IP, which is what I found strange. But
well, I'll find you by IP.
Yeah,
I'm finding you by DNS.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's findmebyip.com/litmus, but there's more.
Well, let's see if I hit the website and see what they go to. Wow. Hey, that's fascinating.
Well, if you click on
It even, by the way, if you hit that, look at this. It tells you, I've never hit Find Me by IP.
Yeah, I haven't either.
That's cool. Yeah. It'll actually come back and say, here's your IP address to the public. Here's the browser that you're running. Oh, and look at this! It even tells you for the browser you're running. This is what support.
Exactly.
So I've hit it with Chrome, and a lot of things are supported on my machine. But I'm sure from there you could go right into like a comparison. And that's it. Findmebyip.com/litmus. LITMUS. There you go. And it's funny how IE has its own little
lots of red X's there.
Lots of red X's. That's funny actually because. In if you look at the web form, well, if you look at any of the stuff for IE, there's 6, 7, 8, 9, and 9 just starts having some check marks, and it even puts percentages on there for some of this stuff. So, for example, with CSS selectors, it's pretty much going to support all of it. But then you get to HTML5 web applications, some of the features, it might support half of them. So anyway, interesting stuff. It's always difficult to get a new standard to get adopted by everybody. Mm-hmm. And it seems like HTML5 has been taking a long time to take off, but it's starting to bear fruit at least now in the mobile space and some of the new non-mobile browsers. But you know, certainly IE looks like really 9 more than 8 is going to get there, I guess, from what I can say. But anyway, interesting stuff. All right. You can get to us anytime you want to by hitting us at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. On there, we've actually set up some new feeds to give you subparts of the site. If you like listening to the dev news, you can just subscribe to the dev news. If you want to listen to the ETE and other sessions that we do, you can subscribe to those separately. You can subscribe to the whole feed for everything if you want to. And so there are links on the site for that. If you want to get to us through email, it's techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. The Twitter address is @techcast. And for the TechCast this week, I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And make it a good week.